This is Pittsburgh Explainer, a new podcast from 90.5 WESA. Every Friday, our reporters help you understand some of the biggest news stories from southwestern Pennsylvania. Thanks for joining us. I'm your host, Liz Reed. It's been a weird week in Pittsburgh and all over the country. The threat of the coronavirus has people staying home. Schools and businesses are closed. Events are canceled. There's nowhere to go and nothing to do. Except that's not really true for a lot of people. Healthcare workers continue to report for duty. Parents have found themselves trying to work from home while taking care of small children. Grocery stores and pharmacies are busier than ever as people prepare for what could be a protracted period of social distancing. The news has been a lot this week, so we can't cover all of it. But in a minute, we are going to check in with a few WESA reporters who I haven't seen all week because they've been working from home. First, I want to talk some numbers. One, as of this recording, late Thursday afternoon, one Pennsylvanian has died from COVID-19. The state health department identified the person only as an adult from Northampton County. This person is the first, but they are not likely to be the last. That's what Governor Tom Wolf said in a public address broadcast from his home on Wednesday evening.
Our only hope is to keep our hospitals from being overwhelmed so our medical professionals can do the most they can. We need businesses to follow our guidance and heed our mitigation efforts if we want to save lives. We need to stay home if we want to save lives. We need to work together if we want to save lives.
As I'm recording this, more than 180 Pennsylvanians have been diagnosed with COVID-19. At least 18 of those are in Allegheny County. More than 1,600 people have tested negative statewide. Here's another number, or a range of numbers. 40% to 60%. That's how many Allegheny County residents Health Director Dr. Deborah Bogan expects will contract the novel coronavirus in the next few months. What Bogan gave is an infection rate over a period of time, which is also what ProPublica did with data from Harvard Global Health Institute. They turned them into maps and graphs that show what would happen in different parts of the country, depending on how quickly the virus spreads and how many people get it. In Pittsburgh, with a 60% infection rate over 6 months, hospitals would be overwhelmed. We currently have only a third of the beds we'd need for COVID-19 patients and all the other non-COVID patients. Okay, so there would be twice as many COVID-19 patients as there are other patients for everything else hospitals currently do. Think about that for a second. Okay, now think about this. If we can roll transmission of the virus out over a long period of time, say 18 months, and if we get lucky and only 20% of people actually contract the virus in that time, we will have all the beds we need. These are wildly different scenarios, and reality is likely to fall somewhere in between. But State Health Secretary Rachel Levine said on Wednesday that she's expecting a surge in patients and the need for temporary hospitals in non-traditional locations.
I don't have specifics at this time. We're considering all alternatives and are working with the hospitals and health systems themselves about their ideas of what would be best to be able to decompress hospitals.
The state holds these press conferences every day at 2 p.m. And every day at 2 p.m., Levine talks about how they're working with health systems to prepare for the onslaught of patients that is coming.
We are working with all of the hospitals and health systems, ourselves as well as the county and municipal health departments, to prepare them for that potential surge over the next number of weeks.
Hello?
Hi, Sarah. It's Liz.
Hey, Liz.
To learn more about what's going on inside Pittsburgh hospitals, we need to call Bowden. Do you have time to talk right now?
Yeah, I'm going to get into my pillow fort. Hang on, okay?
Can you explain what the pillow fort is for? This isn't just like work from home fun for you, right?
No, this isn't work from home fun. This is, I haven't been able to go into the office all week. So the pillow fort is to create a recording environment that tries to capture studio quality at home. So I'm gonna crawl in now.
And I don't know if listeners can hear this, but my cat is clawing at the underside of the mattress right now. So if you hear some claws or some meows. That's my cat, Julie. So my name is Sarah Bowden, and I am the health and science reporter at WESA News.
How's working from home been?
I don't like it. I want to be back in the office. It's been lonely.
All right. Well, where should we start with everything you've been reporting this week?
So this week, local and state health authorities have been emphasizing that they've been preparing for months for COVID-19 and a potential surge at Pennsylvania and Allegheny County hospitals. But I've been talking to nurses and other medical professionals at both Allegheny Health Network and UPMC. And what I'm hearing from frontline medical workers is that they don't feel prepared, and they don't feel like the communication from administration at their hospitals and health systems has been very good. Some people feel like they're flying blind right now, and they're very concerned.
Can you give an example of how people are saying that the hospital systems are unprepared? Like, in what way?
Well, there's a lack of personal protective equipment, I'm told. That means masks, gloves, gowns, eye protection, like goggles. Basically, it's to make sure that if an ill person coughs or sneezes and some of that aerosolizes or just, you know, lands on you if you're closer than 6 feet from the ill person, you know, doesn't get inside your body, keeps you healthy.
And this is the kind of equipment that they need, like, for regular operation, too, right? For surgeries, or if you are in the room of a patient who has MRSA or some other infectious disease like that, right? Like, these are things they need anyway.
Yeah, definitely. But the issue is that most of the time when you go to the hospital or the doctor's office, you don't need to totally gown up for each and every patient. But when most of the people you're seeing are concerned or are presenting with symptoms of COVID-19, you're going to go through a lot of this personal protective equipment really, really fast. So even though the hospitals are saying, you know, we have stockpiles of this equipment, they're going through it fast, I'm told. And there's a lot of concern that there isn't enough to go around and that healthcare workers are being exposed.
If healthcare workers get sick, that seems like it could be really bad.
Yeah, if healthcare workers get sick, I don't know what we're going to do. Because if they're not healthy, who's going to take care of sick people?
What else are you hearing from frontline workers about preparedness?
Some folks are concerned that UPMC hasn't stopped elective surgeries. Now, elective surgeries doesn't always mean like plastic surgery. Sometimes it can mean like removing kidney stones, which kidney stones are very painful. So while that's an elective surgery, it's probably a really important surgery for quality of life. UPMC has not put, as of Thursday, at 4 p.m., UPMC is still doing these elective surgeries. And I think some of the thinking is, well, we might as well get these surgeries in now before we have a really big surge of patients. But also, when you're doing these surgeries, you're using up hospital resources and exposing what otherwise are relatively healthy people to COVID-19, because there are COVID-19 patients in these hospitals, and you're using up personal protective equipment because you're performing these elective surgeries. So it's a really difficult situation.
What are the health systems, Allegheny Health Network and UPMC, say? Like, what's their official statement been about whether or not they're prepared to see a surge of patients in the coming weeks and months?
They're really emphasizing that they've been preparing for months for this, and the head of both the county and the state health department say that if people aren't taking social isolation seriously, there will be a surge, and they're very concerned as to whether the hospital systems can handle so many patients.
We talked last week on the show about testing, about how there were a lot of people whose primary care physicians or primary care providers thought that they should be tested but weren't able to get tested because there was very strict testing criteria that had to go through the county health department last week. Has anything changed when it comes to testing this week?
Yeah, so we've seen a huge expansion of testing in the county, though it's still not enough. Allegheny Health Net, for example, is in the process of standing up 4 drive-through test sites around western Pennsylvania, and UPMC has created its own in-house test where it sends folks to a Southside outpatient facility to get tested. Also, there's a clinic on the north side that is doing drive-through testing. And then, of course, the county health department is still doing testing, and more and more commercial labs are analyzing these samples. But the important thing to remember is that we don't have enough tests right now. I think that's something that we're going to talk about for many years to come, about why we don't have enough tests, but that's the situation we are in right now.
So are they, like, being rationed?
Yeah, these tests are definitely being rationed. You know, you have to have symptoms. You have to, sometimes if you've been exposed but you don't have symptoms, you don't get a test. You're just told to quarantine and see if those symptoms show up. Also, we have to remember, let's say you get your test, you're negative. There's still community spread. This virus is circulating, so that doesn't mean you're, like, safe. You could get your negative.
You're not negative forever.
You're not negative forever.
You could pick it up on your way out of the doctor's office.
Yeah, which is why, like, even though drive-through testing is a decent solution to keep people's germs to themselves, you know, we're all at risk anytime we leave the house. Just because you're negative 1 minute doesn't mean the very next minute you contract the virus. So it's a useful tool in an ideal world. We all are getting tested frequently. That's not what's happening right now. And because we really want to contain this virus, the kind of cost-benefit analysis versus going out and getting tested versus just sitting at home and seeing if you get sick, public health experts say it makes more sense to just keep people isolated and not overwhelm the healthcare system with testing a bunch of people.
When will we start to know whether these social distancing efforts are working when it comes to containing spread of the virus?
I asked Dr. Deborah Bogan, the head of Allegheny County Health Department, that on Thursday afternoon, and she said it should be in a couple weeks. If we're lucky, we won't see an incredible surge of patients, but we should be prepared that this will be the way life is for a while, probably. It could be weeks, it could be months, we don't really know. It's uncomfortable, it's boring, it's scary. But it's a lot worse in France, where that population didn't really heed warnings about social isolation, and now you need to fill out a form for grocery shopping or leaving your house for a quick walk. And I'm not saying it's really great right now, but it could be a lot worse.
This is a lot, Sarah. It's a lot to take in right now.
It's not easy.
Thanks for explaining all of this, Sarah.
No problem.
All right, I'll talk to you later.
I'll talk to you later. Bye.
Hello.
Hello, Sarah. It's Liz.
Hey, Liz. How's it going?
Oh, not bad. I feel like I haven't seen you in a long time.
It has been a very long time since I've seen you.
How is your social isolation going?
It's pretty quiet. Actually, the trucks that have been replacing the lead service line outside of my house just drove away. So everyone's really gone now. It's just me.
It's just you.
Yeah, hold on. Let me climb into my closet first. Close the door here. I've created kind of a fort inside my closet. I have found, there we go. It is the quietest place to record in my house. The sweaters and my old bridesmaid dresses actually muffle the sound pretty nicely. Hi, I'm Sarah Schneider. I cover education.
So because we haven't seen each other, we haven't had a chance to talk about the fact that all of the schools are closed. I think the biggest question on everyone's mind is, how long is this going to last?
Well, that's a good question, and we don't know. And I know that's frustrating. It's a frustrating answer. But we know that schools throughout the state are closed through at least March 27th. The State Department of Education hasn't given any more guidance than that. But the school leaders that I've spoken to think that this could last much longer than just the 10 days that was originally announced. They're trying to prepare for, you know, what learning, meals, what everything could look like during this period of social distancing, because we really don't have any answers right now.
I know in Kansas, they canceled schools through the end of the year. Is that something that could happen here?
Right. Yeah. And a lot of school leaders, they think the state is looking to see what other states are going to do and to take direction from them. Many schools have shut down at least for 2 weeks, but yeah, Kansas is the first that we've seen close through the end of the year, which many say is a real possibility here in Pennsylvania.
So what does that mean for student learning? Like, aren't kids required to go to school to, like, physically be in school a certain number of days every year?
The State Department of Education requires there to be 180 instructional days. And so that makes it really complicated for this at-home learning because all students are guaranteed what is called a free, appropriate public education. That means that all students, students with disabilities, students with an individualized education plan, are required and guaranteed to receive a free and appropriate public education. So if schools are trying to send home online learning or send home packets that to be graded, that's probably not going to work. It's probably not going to be counted by the state unless they're meeting the needs of those students with individualized education plans. The schools that I've spoken to that did send homework said they haven't made a decision yet if it's going to be graded. Pittsburgh Public Schools sent home packets, and they've uploaded some assignments, but they're saying that's just to keep students engaged during this time and that it won't be graded because of equity concerns. Philadelphia Public Schools actually said this week that schools can't send home any kind of work because of that equity concern.
Like varying abilities to, like, connect to the internet or have an adult to help you, stuff like that?
Correct. Yeah. Not all students have access to the internet. Not all students were sent home laptops so that they could connect to a hotspot if that's available. And also, you know, if a student's individualized education plan says that that student requires one-on-one learning, unless you can guarantee that at a safe distance, then it's not going to work.
So will the state change the requirement or offer like a reprieve from this 180-day rule?
They could. We haven't heard that yet. We know that if school districts do not meet the 180-day requirement because of this 10-day closure, that they won't be penalized. But the state hasn't said yet if those learning days will have to be made up. So we just know that districts won't be penalized.
Okay, what about standardized testing? It's now officially spring, and spring brings standardized testing. So what's going to happen with that this year?
Yeah, there were a lot of questions this week about the impact school closures would have on standardized tests, which are largely used to evaluate school and teacher performance. And then Thursday, the Pennsylvania Department of Education announced that all tests administered by the state were canceled. And the Secretary of Education, Pedro Rivera, says that the department is working with the U.S. Department of Education and advocating that the U.S. Department of Education waive assessment requirements for schools impacted by the pandemic. So Pennsylvania students will not take standardized tests this year, but we're not sure if the state will be penalized for that.
When you say that standardized testing informs how schools and teachers are evaluated, do those evaluations have an impact on budgets?
It could. Standardized tests determine the bottom 5% of schools across the state, and those schools receive some extra help from the state. That could be financially, or they get a plan from the state to help improve academic outcomes. So, yeah, there could be financial incentive to those two.
You know, I can't help but think, too, about how Pittsburgh Public Schools and other school districts are moving toward a community schools model where the school kind of serve as a hub for services. So not only do kids get an education, but they get free breakfast and lunch. Parents can get connected to social service programs like WIC or public housing. What happens to all of those efforts?
Right. I think we've known that schools serve more purposes than just academic. But I think this closure has really shown how much the community relies on schools. The Pittsburgh Public School District moved pretty quickly to make sure that meals would still be distributed to families. All Pittsburgh students receive free breakfast and lunch every day. And so they worked to make sure, at least on Monday, that all 54 school buildings were open to distribute those meals. Now, that number has dwindled rapidly because a few people have been exposed to someone who tested positive for COVID-19. And so a few of those locations have since been closed for meal distribution. I won't say how many because that number is changing pretty quickly. But, you know, childcare is also an issue. Anthony Hamlet, the superintendent of Pittsburgh Public Schools, was on the Confluence this week, and he said that the district is working with families to make sure that they can find childcare. But, you know, fortunately and very unfortunately, a lot of people are being asked to stay home right now. And so he said he's not as concerned about that childcare aspect. He's hoping that families are able to be home with their kids, but that creates a lot of other complications for families. Being isolated at home with their children for weeks on end is going to cause a lot of stress and a lot of anxiety.
And there are a ton of parents in the Pittsburgh region who work for healthcare systems who, you know, are needed right now and likely in the next couple of weeks and months are going to be even more needed at work. So that's an ongoing challenge that I imagine you'll be reporting on in the coming weeks.
Definitely. Yeah, it's going to be very complicated. Fortunately, some good things have come out of this so far. You know, what's really been encouraging for me is that educators are finding pretty unique ways to keep in touch with their kids because they know that this is a really stressful time for families in general, and kids are used to having routine, and when they're not having the same routine, that could cause some anxiety. So, you know, the principal of Lincoln Elementary, a Pittsburgh public school, she started reading a bedtime story to her kids and putting that on YouTube. And then the Mount Lebanon school superintendent is broadcasting this kind of mindful moment every day. He's leading students through these breathing exercises. So this is a big adjustment for everyone, but I think it has been encouraging that adults are stepping up and they know how important schools are to kids.
Well, Sarah, thanks for helping me understand everything that's going on in the world of K through 12 education right now as we deal with the response to the coronavirus.
Yeah, thanks so much, Liz.
Okay, talk to you later.
Hello?
Hello, Margaret.
Oh, hello.
How are you doing?
I'm okay. How are you?
I'm pretty good. Okay, so are you ready to talk?
Yes, I just need to, I'm going to walk upstairs. One second.
Is that where your home studio is? I use that term generously, I guess.
I was going to say, that's where that's where our bed is, and that's where the comforter is that I'm going to put over my head. Okay. All right, now I'm swathed and down.
Okay, can you do the thing where you introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Margaret J. Krause. I report on development and transportation, but this week I've been reporting on how coronavirus is affecting some of the most vulnerable people in our region.
You know, one thing I keep hearing people talk about is if you're not working because your job is shut down, because you work at, say, a non-essential business, you're not going to make any money this month, maybe into next month, who knows how long. How do you pay rent? Is this something that public officials are looking into finding solutions for?
Yeah, I mean, even before coronavirus, roughly half of Americans, there was a survey that found that roughly half of Americans wouldn't be able to handle an unexpected $500 expense. Most rent is over $500. So evictions are sort of tricky in the fact that they pass through a lot of hands. So there was a call for a moratorium on evictions, and then the president judge of the Magisterial Court of Allegheny County, the 5th Judicial District, said that there would be basically all court action would stop, and that includes evictions. And so through April 14th in Allegheny County, there aren't evictions because they can't be processed through the courts.
Okay, but that doesn't necessarily stop a landlord from, like, planning to evict someone who doesn't pay their rent on April 1st, right?
No, absolutely not. And that's why this remains a very delicate situation. I mean, across Pennsylvania, we learned yesterday, the Pennsylvania Supreme Court said there's a stay on evictions through April 3rd. That's 2 weeks from now. To your point, that's not a lot of time if you've just lost your job and the whole economy is crumbling, so you don't have much hope of finding another one. It still leaves a lot of people in a very precarious situation.
What about like public housing? Is there anything officials are doing to make sure that people who live in public housing can't get evicted over maybe like a longer period of time? Because, you know, government does have some control over that, right? Whereas they have more limited control over private landlords.
Yeah, private landlords, because they're businesses, they can't just say, hey, tough cookies, you can't collect rent for 3 months. Housing authority.
Also, private landlords still have to pay their mortgages.
Yeah, private landlords are not, you know, they have financial obligations as well. So there is this, we're finding out in many ways that we are a community. We all affect one another, and that goes both up the economic ladder and down. So public housing authorities have as their name implies, some authority. Some housing authorities have already taken action to make sure that their people are not going to get evicted if they've just lost all of their income. But it still depends on what happens at the federal level, how much leeway is given to HUD to allow local housing authorities to prevent evictions in the long term. So it's going to cost money. It's not exactly sure where that's going to come from for how long. And that's really the big question is, people just had the rug pulled out from underneath of them, again, with very little hope of finding another source of income in the near term. And so it would be great, perhaps, if direct payments were made to adult Americans. But if it happens for 1 or 2 months, people are facing much larger holes than that.
Obviously, what public officials are trying to do by preventing evictions, at least in the short term, is to make sure people don't end up out in the street. And that's something you also reported on this week about how people who are experiencing homelessness are at an increased risk of contracting the coronavirus and then, you know, possibly spreading it as well, right?
What we've heard over and over from public health officials and elected officials is for people to wash their hands and practice social distancing. The people I talked with this week said that's not necessarily an option if you are experiencing homelessness. So shelters and agencies in Allegheny County are working to figure out, as they see more people who are experiencing homelessness who maybe come for a meal or come to sign up for a bed that evening, how do they make sure that they're enforcing social distancing where they can and taking people's temperatures? If they have symptoms, alerting the hospital before they send someone there. And what's really rough, though, is that if someone does have symptoms, they may just be told to isolate. Well, it may be tough for a place that only has so many beds to have one person take up a room that's meant for 6 people so they can isolate. So the county is working with agencies and service providers to say, okay, here are locations where we can send people so that they can isolate safely. Another thing is just outreach programs. A couple different places are working to provide hygiene kits. Light of Life Rescue Mission on the north side was asking for donations of spray bottles that they can put soapy water in so that people can at least wash their hands if they're not going to come in to a shelter for the evening.
Okay. Well, Margaret, thanks so much for your reporting this week.
Yeah. Are we doing another news this week?
Do you know of any other news that's not related to coronavirus?
In fact, I do. A little bit of a bright spot. There are efforts to complete a trail between Cleveland, Ohio and Pittsburgh.
Oh, cool. Like a bike trail?
Yeah, a bike trail. And it's part of this Industrial Heartlands Trail Coalition. It eventually is going to be 1,500 miles that connects New York and Pennsylvania, West Virginia, and Ohio. It's about half completed, which doesn't sound like a lot. There's a lot of trail segments in this Industrial Heartland Trail system. It's just that there's bits that are hard to acquire. So there are all these gaps, but there's actually a lot of trails. And one of them that they really want to finish completing is Cleveland to Pittsburgh.
That's a really good story about that bike trail. And actually, that reminds me, I have one other person I want to call, so I got to go.
Okay, thanks, Liz.
All right, bye, Margaret.
Bye.
Hello?
Hello, Katie.
Hey.
Hey, it's Liz. How are you?
Hey, Liz. Good. How are you?
Good. What are you doing?
Oh, I'm just getting back from a walk.
Walks are so important these days.
They really, really are. Hold on one second. Let me go into my house. All right.
Are you walking? Are you trying to walk every day?
I'm trying to, yeah. I've actually spent the last couple days walking through downtown.
What were you doing downtown?
Well, our managing editor, Larkin, and I talked about doing a little, like a feature series for the website of walks that people can take while they're self-isolating so they can still get out and not go stir crazy in their home, but, you know, feel like they're engaging and learning in some way.
Oh, that sounds really cool. How does it work?
We're going to be rolling them out in the next few days, next few weeks, in like a neighborhood by neighborhood basis. So the first few are going to be downtown Pittsburgh. There's a couple different routes that I'm looking at. They're going to last you like 30 to 45 minutes, a good healthy walking time. And they're going to include historically significant structures and items and artwork that you can see around the city. And it's going to be for each neighborhood. So I've been calling a lot of people from neighborhood historical associations, and saying, hey, what's a cool tidbit about your neighborhood that people might not know, and they might pass it every day. And it's been really great talking to these folks because they are really emphasizing how important it is to stop and look around you. Because I think, I mean, this mm-hmm. happens to me all the time. Like, you go downtown and you pass these things every day, or you go through your own neighborhood and you're just like, okay, whatever, whatever. But if you look around and you stop for a while and you actually walk around and you notice things, it's really important. I think it makes people a little less anxious and a little calmer.
Can you give me, like, the Cliff's Notes of the first one?
The first one is in the Golden Triangle downtown, and it's going to be starting in Market Square, which everybody is familiar with, but I'm going to include a little bit about what used to be there and try to have people kind of close their eyes and imagine a time where there were two huge market buildings there, and there was a roller skating rink on the fourth floor of one of them. I mean, this was a totally different community, but a lot of the reason Pittsburgh is planned the way it is because of the way the grid system was set up in Market Square. And then it's going to go around to some other historically significant districts like 4th Avenue, which was once the financial street in Pittsburgh where they did all their banking, and kind of round up at Point State Park so you can grab some food, watch the sunset, whatever you want.
That's a good idea, Katie. I'm glad you're getting out and about.
Yeah, I think you should too. Take your family out on a walk.
Yeah, I'm sure the kids would love to get out because they've been stuck inside just like everybody else. Okay, well, thanks, Katie. I'm going to get off the phone and send you these files so you can cut and mix the show together.
All right, sounds good, Liz. I miss you.
I miss you too, Katie. Hopefully we'll see each other again soon.
Hopefully. Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.
That's Pittsburgh Explainer for this week. Our show is produced by Katie Blackley. Larkin Page Jacobs is our managing editor. I'm your host, Liz Reed. You can find all of WESA's reporting on our website, WESA.fm, and of course on the air at 90.5 FM. Just a quick note here at the end of the show. Our small newsroom has been working around the clock to keep you up to date as the situation unfolds, and we have so many more stories in the works. The people I work with are incredibly dedicated to the mission of public radio, to provide impactful, compelling journalism that is always free for anyone. But it is not free to make. Like most organizations, we will suffer financially as a result of this pandemic. We are member-supported. We are public radio. We are your public radio. So please, if you have the means, help us to be resilient so we can continue to do the kind of journalism that this community deserves. And if you do not have the means, just listen and share what you learn. Thanks for listening. Talk to you next week.